Because of listeners like you, Preborn has helped to rescue over 67,000 babies. Your $28 to sponsor one ultrasound doubled a baby's chance at life. Your tax-deductible gift saves lives. Please join us in this mission. To donate, go to preborn.com/AFR.
The radical left will stop at nothing to find a way to end life in the womb. They're now using the mail to ship abortion pills straight into homes across America, even in states where abortion is illegal. It's not healthcare, and it must be stopped. You can take action today. When you support AFA Action, you'll help us hold Big Pharma accountable and defend life. As our thanks, we'll send you the Christian Handbook for Civic Engagement. Visit afaaction.net to give your urgent gift today.
Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I love talking about the things of God because of truth and the biblical worldview.
The U.S. Constitution obligates our government to preserve and protect the rights that our founders recognize come from God, our Creator, not our government. I believe that Scripture in the Bible is very clear that God is the one that raised up each of you, and God has allowed us to be brought here to this specific moment in time.
This is Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Good morning. It is Thursday, November 13th, and surprise, surprise, the government is finally open. So DC decided to turn the lights back on, and the House passed a bill to end the shutdown. This was the longest shutdown in our nation's history. This coming from the Hill, the House on Wednesday passed a sweeping spending package to reopen the government, setting the stage to end a marathon shutdown, the longest in U.S. history, that churned economic turmoil around the country and sparked an internal battle among Democrats over the future of the party and how to best take on President Trump. The vote in the lower chamber was 222 to 209, almost strictly along party lines. Only two Republicans opposed the measure to protest deficit spending, while six Democrats hopped the aisle to support it, citing the importance of getting federal funding flowing again. Quote, I respect Chuck Schumer. I think he had a great longstanding career, but I'm afraid that it may be time for the Senate Democrats to get a new leader. That was from Representative Glenn Ivey, a Democrat from Maryland, who told The Hill that this week. Mike Johnson said, the peaceful sunset outside my office window tonight is a reminder to me that God still has his hand of blessing over the nation. Thankfully, after 42 long days, we will soon get our vote to finally end the painful Democrat shutdown and get the American government open and operating again for the people. But will voters remember this as a Democrat shutdown or as the GOP failing to actually figure out how to govern? Well, let's ask Mark Mitchell, who is the COO of Rasmussen Reports. Good morning, Mark. And, you know, I'm a little nonplussed with the GOP here. I'm kind of not impressed with Speaker Johnson's rhetoric here. How about you?
Yeah, this is an understatement for sure. All this stuff has happened so fast that we really haven't been able to get like numbers back to really understand the impact of what happened with the shutdown. And this one was also different, like quite a bit weirder than other shutdowns, because the trend is always, well, okay, the shutdown happens and immediately presidential approval tanks 10 points. And then the shutdown ends and it comes back. We asked people if the shutdown had any impact, and only like 10% of people said major impact. And usually the blame question is sort of hard to attribute to. Well, this time people blamed Republicans and Trump more, but it's because a lot of Republicans and Trump people wanted the shutdown. So that was different. And then also it took about 3 weeks into the shutdown for Trump's numbers to even move. And it's hard to know why that is. You know, he was focused on other things for sure. But then all of a sudden they just sort of plunged right on election day, right going into the end of it, probably because of SNAP, but probably because it looks like the Republicans have absolutely no plan and did nothing. The whole point of this was to, like, have leverage over the Democrats, you know what I mean? Like, actually fire the people, actually investigate the agent, do something. And they didn't. They didn't do anything, and it looked like they weren't sticking up for Americans. So I assume that's part of the reason that Donald Trump's approval rating is down to -9 net approval, which is the lowest he's had of the term, but it's really not that terrible. You know, Biden was getting down to -20 after Afghanistan and was at -15 for a lot of his term. And the Republican numbers are still holding strong, and I've been watching those because Donald Trump has had a string of some pretty visible L's out there. it's hard to know how much of that is just his base on Twitter being upset versus what will actually get through to Americans. But I would say that in general, this idea somehow that everybody hates the Democrat Party and that the Republican Party is great is like a meme trope at this point. It's really not the case. Every time we've asked, the Democrat and Republican Party favorabilities have been pretty close. Republicans only win by a point or two. But everybody is mad at Congress right now, especially independents. They give Congress a 3% excellent, 6% good. And it is a Republican Congress. So these are the kind of trends that will give us, you know, the force that swings the pendulum back to Democrats. And I haven't gone into the field yet with it, but I hear from other pollsters who are good that they're seeing generic ballot numbers now that have Democrats like up 7 or 8 points. That's horrifying, especially considering that it looks like the Republicans aren't in it long term for this, you know, gerrymandering war of attrition. So that's, I mean, it's shaping up to be a pretty certain Democrat victory next fall. And I don't really know how you change that destiny other than some type of really, really bold and specific action, like lay out a contract for America and deliver on some of it between now and next fall. And it needs to be this new politics that you and I talked about earlier this week. You're not going to win on like pearl clutching, traditional boomer tradcon, free market conservatism. Because they need to get the youth vote and they need to get crossovers in indies, and they're not going to get it with the old stuff.
Yeah, completely agree. And this is where I don't think that anybody in America right now is feeling like this is a giant, you know, massive Republican win here. And we're super proud of the Republicans for, you know, for getting the government reopened after 42 days. This still feels kind of like a spineless loss for the Republicans. And I don't think that their messaging really came across well. If anything, we saw some of the issues with SNAP benefits. We saw some of the issues with the government not funding things that they should and still funding things that they shouldn't. But this new package that was passed last night really didn't have any kind of DOGE-related activity to it. So I'm not sure that Republicans, at least in the perception of the average voter, can really kind of clutch onto one thing driving in the media to express, okay, we're actually winning this fight with the Democrats. And then meanwhile, Trump said in an interview with Laura Ingraham that went viral and conservatives were actually really upset about this, that the United States doesn't have people with, quote unquote, certain talents to fill jobs domestically. Yeah. And he was talking about the whole H-1B skilled worker visa program fight. And he's basically advocating for this while the biggest issue, in my opinion, that he ran on and had a mandate for in 2024 was to close the border, stop immigration, period. And I think Republicans are trying to dance the line far too finely between legal versus illegal immigration. It's like, no, just stop it all right now. Close our borders, deport, you know, massive waves of people. Let's get our country back on its footing. And then we'll talk about, you know, maybe who else deserves to be here. But I mean, when you look at the statistics, Mark, of, you know, who was for Mamdani in New York, not even just the youth vote, but when you look at the foreign born voters for Mamdani, I mean, that was in the 60% compared to U.S. born. We have to figure out how to get our country back. And I think this just struck a note that was really sour at a time when people are wondering, where is the GOP? Why haven't they done anything on pro-life, conservative priorities, immigration, economy? I mean, none of this is happening.
Yeah, 100%. And I'll lay it out very clearly what has to happen and why nothing's happening. The Republican Party at large, you know, the state, local, you know, the RNC, the NRCC, all those organizations, there's probably about 5% good people, and the rest of them are basically a big donor harvesting scheme that enriches themselves, like the consulting class layer. That's really, I think, is it. And I've asked people, and they say, yeah. And, some of this is cynicism. Like, every person I ask says yes. And some of this is cynicism, and they say, well, you know, if you give a dollar to the Democrats, at least they will use it efficiently for their causes. but half of that dollar for Republicans goes to padding consulting pockets. It's that bad.
It's so true.
Then the Republican Party, they don't want to acknowledge that this is about immigration, and they certainly won't acknowledge the fact that you want your country back, because they don't want to acknowledge that they gave it away, which is kind of like really what happened. And so where we're at right now is all the numbers have gotten worse. Everybody's always hated Congress, but like every single measure has gotten worse. Trust in the federal government is down to 30%. I think the number was 27% in the battlegrounds of people who say today's children will not be better off than their parents. So this is a scarcity situation, right? It's we say it's inflation, we say it's prices, but the real problem is that wages haven't kept up with prices, and that there are not enough houses, and it's all scarcity. And it's because not only did we flood the border with illegals, I think the bigger issue is we flooded the country with immigrants because of big business, who are now firing people with, you know, using DEI as a cudgel. But it's like a right-hand, left-hand situation. DEI was the left hand, and the right hand was globalization. So that's where we're at. And the way to fix scarcity, again, is to crack down on immigration. But every single, in my opinion, D.C.-based interest, most of the businesses, don't want that at all. And so it's really troubling when Trump comes on TV and actually defends the big business stance, which is, oh, the talent. Well, it's like, that's propaganda. Sure, we need talent. Here's how you have talent. We can have 10,000 H-1Bs, hard cap, and the businesses have to auction them each year. That's it. That's all the talent we need, because we have talent here. These people's resumes are getting passed over, and they know it. Like, I have people who lost their job this month under the Trump administration because they got replaced with H-1Bs. It's still happening. And so, again, the problem is that the Republican Party, they need to change the system. This was the referendum. We asked, do you want business as usual in Washington, D.C., or massive change? And massive change wins 75-20. And when were people most happy? The highest right direction, the highest youth Trump approval is back when Trump was giving massive change, just a ridiculous stream of news out of DOGE and all the executive orders and all the things that he was just doing. And so if they get that message back, I don't know how they do it, because the Republican Party is so intransigent. They don't want to change because all of their interests don't want to change. It's that simple, though. Break the wheel. That's what voters are craving for, including voters on the left.
100%. And I'm talking to Mark Mitchell, who is the COO of Rasmussen Reports. And, you know, instead of breaking the system, Republicans are simply proving that they're part of the system and that they are still for big government. They're still for government handouts. They don't actually want to reduce deficit spending or spending at all. And so while we started this year, at least I started, you know, relatively excited about, you know, Trump's new term. He was working with Elon Musk. DOGE was going to have, you know, significant light that was shown on DC. And then as soon as Elon Musk kind of tapped out and recognized, like, oh, this isn't going to have any practical effect. Like, basically, this is just a PR stunt. He realized, you know, this isn't worth my time. And at that moment, I think, was when a lot of the MAGA populace really also recognized that when you have the entrenched swamp, it's really tough for even somebody like Trump, who wanted to come in and drain it, to actually productively and effectively do that. And then meanwhile, you know, so now you have all of these losses, and then and you have, you know, a lot of things that just simply weren't followed up on at all. And we're running out of time rapidly, because if Democrats win in 2026, then all they're going to do is simply oppose and drag down the Trump administration for the last 2 years. And the words lame duck are going to be thrown around almost every other word, in especially in a lot of the legacy media.
Yeah.
But now, Mark, you even have, I mean, just to show how totally out of touch this is, I was mind boggled by Secretary Scott Bessent on the new Trump accounts. He literally went on Fox and Friends yesterday and said every child born retroactively to January 1st, 2025, and for the next 3 years, is going to get a $1,000 account that's going to be invested in the U.S. stock market. That's another $1,000 for working families. This is like this is basically baby's first Social Security account. I mean, it's nuts.
Well, you know, every solution is the oligarchy. it's every solution's the oligarchy. Bill Pulte's probably a nice guy. His solution for the housing crisis was an oligarchy. It's like, oh, more debt for the bankers, more interest out of the young people. And this is the exact same thing. It seems like he's literally surrounded by billionaires who are whispering in his ear, and that's what he's talking. He doesn't understand that his base is mad. He doesn't understand the desperate need for a populism movement. He's talking about turkey prices, and people can't buy homes to cook a turkey in. That's the thing. And it's like, I would hope that there was a finer nuance of understanding about the economy than we just need to lower gas prices 30 cents and we're going to win elections. We're not there anymore. That's not the politics. It's literally the left's going to loot the treasury and the empire is going to fall if we don't fix this. And the Republican Party is like, oh, well, they're going to get blamed more. That's not it anymore. This is just business as usual. And so, like, we know these things work. Shock and awe and flood the zone. And I just think back to the first Trump administration. And yes, I'm not saying he's accomplished nothing, but I'm saying just in the first year of the first Trump administration, remember, there were actually people were passing around lists on Twitter of Trump's accomplishments.
Mm-hmm.
And so even the messaging out of the administration, they're not even taking credit for the actual wins they're doing. People on Twitter are passing around like, Mark, why are you being so critical? Look, immigration has reduced. And it's like, okay, but Trump's defending immigration. I don't know what to tell you. They have no idea. It seems like they have even less of an idea of what they're doing than in the first Trump administration. And politics is like 10 times more critical than it was back then. And so
yeah.
I don't know what to tell you.
Well, and interestingly, and I wonder your thought on this, Twitter user, Savannah Hernandez, who is a contributor with TPUSA and, has an X handle. I actually agree with this. She said, this week has made me realize the true impact of Charlie Kirk's voice behind the scenes. He would often privately push the admin away from policies he knew would have a negative impact on the country. Without him, the admin is completely out of touch. I think there's a lot of truth to that because Charlie was possibly the last young person, and I'm talking like under 40. I mean, and he was barely over 30, that was actually genuinely a true conservative in every sense of the word, understood that principled position, but still could connect with younger voters. And I know just personally from my friendship with Charlie that this is accurate, that, you know, he was in constant contact with the admin and Trump listened to him. And without that kind of voice, I mean, there are a lot of people that are basically running, you know, the admin that is in the 80s or 90s, basically, of when the GOP had, you know, a lot of positive numbers. I mean, like Scott Bessent reminds me of, you know, the old white guy of, like, you know, the 90s that's so far out of touch. And I think there's a lot of truth to Charlie's voice being gone.
Trump won because of young people and is going to lose because he's governing like old people. I think it's really that simple. And it's probably correct. I think that's definitely true because remember J.D. Vance's story that he told at the Turning Point USA event, how Charlie Kirk literally was central in shutting down the voices that wanted to put boots on the ground in Iran, which would have been a horrifying public opinion crisis. And he's gone. And it also kind of makes you wonder, you know, about how important he really was in that organization. And the fact that if that's really true, if he was the voice of populism and change that was helping the Trump administration win and he's gone, like we're really in trouble. Like we are really in trouble because this wasn't supposed to happen again. Trump was supposed to have learned in the first administration not to just surround himself with moralist swamp creatures. And now he's surrounded himself with other people who are just as dead. And I hate to be a Monday morning quarterback, but I've talked about this. Jenna, just think about how many events Trump has had over the last 10 years, how many rallies, how many hundreds of thousands of people, millions of people have gone to those rallies. Those rallies were some of the best people in America, patriotic, kind, giving. All of the stories we've heard about all of those rallies, the people there. And I've said this years ago, so, I mean, at least it's not Monday morning quarterbacking for me. Imagine if they had just had a resume stand there and done interviews.
Yeah, Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, and this, Mark, just in the last couple of minutes I have with you in this segment. And by the way, Mark is going to join me on the podcast On Demand. It's going to be released tomorrow on Friday morning. And we go a lot more into detail about why the GOP is losing young men and a lot more into detail about a lot of this. And so just prediction, this is probably going to make you angry. And that's exactly what we're going for in a sense, is to not just kind of rest on the winds of like, oh, my party is the one in the right and on the right, but to actually take a genuinely crystal clear look at the future of conservatism. So without, you know, totally giving away the ending, Mark, you know, what does the GOP at large, not just Trump, but I mean, I'm even more disappointed in the Republican Congress for literally doing nothing. They have a president who's willing to sign every piece of legislation that they would push out that would be for the America First agenda. They've given him nothing. They've done nothing on, you know, pro-life, immigration, you know, all of these things that the Trump mandate provided. And so I think that they are just, I mean, massive L's all around. So what does the GOP need to do between now and next November to even have a shot of retaining Congress?
Yeah, I mean, I'll tell them exactly what they need to do, and you'll hear it and you'll say that they'll never do that. And I know, but at least we'll have told them. And they literally need to go off into a retreat and come up with a contract for America that's focused on economic populism and government reform. And it needs to be very crystal clear, not like agenda talking points, like, no, we are going to give you X, Y, and Z and lay it out. And they need to accomplish at least 25% of that by next November. And it will probably be through reconciliation. And I understand that. But those bills can't be 3,000-page D.C. abortions full of pork. They have to be literally very clear so you get the public opinion wins. Should walk America through the process of what's going in it and why, and do PR campaigns around it, and show that you can actually govern. Because right now you're going to lose because the young people don't care about party and they don't care about conservatism. They just want somebody to govern. And we might hate the ideas of the left, but they will get bills through and they will get public opinion wins on those bills. It'll probably destroy the republic. And it's as easy as that. And if Trump could, like, understand his base, maybe, I think that's a very quick fix and it would save his numbers and he would help bring the Republican Party numbers up. But they have to work together. And, you know, unfortunately, I do think that the Republican Party is going to have been proven to have been given the best chance the right is ever going to have to actually fix things. And it just shows that, well, no, we all know it's exactly who we thought it was, which is completely captured by interests.
Yeah, well, we got to take a break here. And Mark Mitchell, some really great commentary there. And like I said, he's going to join me on the podcast tomorrow. So go click on the icon for podcasts at AFR.net. You can download that actually anywhere that you stream podcasts as well, you know, Spotify, you know, all of that. And go to On Demand, and we will do a deeper dive into why the GOP is losing young men primarily, and a really fascinating story, personal story from an account on X talking about his own 11-year-old son and seeing this kind of through the lens of how the institutions have failed young men and why they're pushing back so strongly. And the GOP is really doing nothing. So all of that and more, but we will be right back with more here this morning, right after this. We're living in a time when truth is under attack. Lies are easy to tell, easy to spread, and easy to believe. But truth? Truth is costly. And nowhere is the cost greater than for mothers in crisis. When a woman is told abortion is her only option, silence and lies surround her. But when she walks into a preborn network clinic, she's met with compassion, support, and the truth about the growing life inside her. That moment of truth happens through a free ultrasound, and it's a game changer. When a mother sees her baby and hears that heartbeat, it literally doubles the chance she will choose life. Preborn Network clinics are on the front lines, meeting women in their darkest hour, loving them, helping them choose life, and sharing the truth. Friend, this is not the time to be silent. It is the time for courage, for truth, and for life. Just $28 provides one ultrasound and the opportunity for a mother to see her baby to help her choose truth and choose life. Please donate today. Call #250 and say baby. That's #250 baby, or give online at preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. And, you know, if you think that the GOP is just very lame and they are spineless and they're not really doing anything, this is the moment in time where we really do need a revival of conservative principles and not being just sold in the package of what a lot of young people are describing as sort of a view of the past, and they don't really want to go backward, and they have this view of conservatism kind of oddly, but I think maybe in some sense appropriately, that a lot of times when conservatives are saying we're trying to conserve something, it seems like we are just looking at the past and saying, you know, we want to go back to the days of Reagan, and we want to go back to, you know, the era of the founders, and the Gen Zers and you know, and the Zoomers are living in a world that is completely different than, you know, the 1950s. And they're utilizing, you know, AI, the tech boom. They have a lot of different issues that are important to them. And for the future of conservatism, I think that we would be wise as, and I put myself kind of in that old guard in the sense that, you know, I'm definitely conservative, not a populist, because my view, like Charlie's, is built on the biblical worldview first and recognizing truth first and the principles of a legitimate government authority, and then working my way up from there in terms of how I view every different subject matter, including the family, the church, and the civil government, which are the institutions that God ordained. And so when we talk about, you know, the young people being discouraged in institutions, those are largely human institutions. But I think overall, we need to have a respect and a vested interest in the institutions that God ordained. When we talk about institutions, we need to not just be talking about the civil government and, you know, welfare handouts and all of these other policy positions. We need to be talking about institutions and bringing the conversation to what God himself wants for the individual so that we can be the most productive, the most free, and honestly, the most happy and joyful, because when we are following the principles of the truth of God, that's where true human flourishing can happen. And that is literally what the founding era understood. That's what conservatism has taught throughout American history. And obviously before that, and, you know, the Enlightenment, all of that, and conservative principles are, you know, as old as in the beginning God, because we recognize the principles that come from God's authority. But here in America, at least, those principles have been at the heart of everything that the overall right has done throughout American history. And so when we talk about the founding era, when we talk about Reaganism, when we talk even about, you know, Trumpism, I think we need to not just kind of hearken back and almost have this forward, backward looking view. We need to show how those principles still relate to today and to the future, because they are the best opportunity to actually live out the American dream and actually promote human flourishing. This is why Charlie Kirk always told young men, especially, I mean, young people in general, but young men especially, that you need to get married, you need to have children, you need to be involved in a church, and you need to look at having a home. I mean, all of those things, he was calling for participation and having a buy-in and a purchase into the institutions that God ordained. And he knew, because this has just been the truth of God, he knew that that buy-in is ultimately what then would spawn a policy and a vote that doesn't look like New York City. It doesn't look like socialism. It doesn't look like this frustration and anger that so many young men especially are seeing, with saying, well, you know, why am I working so hard? when, you know, the government is just giving free handouts to, you know, all of these individuals who don't want to work. I mean, I saw an Instagram reel where some, you know, very just honestly morbidly obese woman who clearly had, you know, her hair and her nails and her eyelashes done and was wearing, like, you know, this velour sweatsuit and everything. I mean, she didn't look homeless, but she looked like she was very well fed. She was complaining about her SNAP benefits being foreclosed. And this reporter, who was a young man, just said to her, goes, well, you know, what, do you have a job? Are you going to work? And she paused for like a solid 3 seconds and just looked at him and then said, well, what does that have to do with anything? And you could see the anger in that clip and in the responses of people saying, those are the types of people that I don't want to work to then have my tax dollars support. And so then when you have people like Secretary Bessent who's saying, you know, we're just going to give $1,000 if you happen, you know, by the grace of God, but, you know, if you happen to be born between 2025 and 2028, the government is just going to give you $1,000 handout, but no, wait, it gets better. They're going to invest it for you into the stock market under the auspices of, you know, this will be good for you down the line. And if you actually do the numbers and you look at it, I mean, the maturity rate on this is like barely double by the time that that they're 18, unless, you know, the family continues to contribute to this at kind of an equal sum every year. And if that's the case, then why is the government starting these accounts anyway? I mean, it's just so completely out of touch. And so when Charlie was speaking to the young men, the thing that I think beyond what the conversation, you know, with Mark and saying that Charlie's voice is now no longer influencing the Trump administration, and I agree that that is a huge loss. Because I think he was sort of at least an attempt at equilibrium and an attempt at saying, you know, from a young person's perspective, still advocating for conservative principles, the institutions that God ordained. But I really think the biggest loss of Charlie's voice was speaking into the lives of young men. And I was talking actually with my pastor about this when he and I, you know, one of my pastors, he and I went and had kind of a Charlie Kirk style, you know, Q&A format a couple of weeks ago with our church's youth group. And he was saying after this, he said, you know, I see a lot of people, you know, like you, like Ali Beth Stuckey, being able to, you know, kind of come in and fill in the gap that Charlie left. And I thought it was interesting that, he mentioned me, of course, because I'm standing in front of him, but also somebody like an Ali Beth Stuckey. And I said, I agree. And I love Ali Beth. And I'm, you know, I appreciate that he thinks that of me. And I said, but we need a man. We need a man to step in and be able to shepherd and disciple young men in the way that Charlie did. Because no matter how good of an advocate I am, or Ali Beth is, or Meg Basham, or, you know, even Megyn Kelly, you know, who has, I think, some brilliant analysis. I mean, you know, a lot of very strong, attuned women. I will never be able to reach young men in the same way that Charlie did, simply because men need other men to disciple them, to shepherd them, and to speak into the masculinity and the role that men need to have and to take up in their participation in the institutions that God ordained. And that's just true. It's not sexist. I mean, I'm saying that this as a woman, but this is the design that God provided, is that men are supposed to be the leaders in the home, and they are supposed to be the leaders in the church. And as we have seen the overall feminization of the culture, I'm happy to do my part in ministry, and this is why I love having this radio program, but I recognize that I will never be as effective as a female voice advocating for these young men as someone like Charlie, who could directly peer-to-peer, but as a male leader, speak to them. And I think that is the greatest thing that we lost with Charlie's death, was someone who was so kind and gracious and relatable and an understanding of politics and policy, and was, you know, a true advocate for America, was an advocate for Trump, was, you know, very wildly popular. And yet he always brought it back to the truth of God and didn't talk about the institutions that are man-made. He talked about the institutions that God ordained. And that's where we need to focus, and we need to be looking for young men to rise up and take a hold of Charlie's mission, because we need someone like that who understands conservative principles, can articulate them from a biblical worldview, relatable position, and can disciple young men who is also within their age group. Now, you know, Charlie was only about 30, so he was older than a lot of the people that he spoke with on campus, at least the students, but he wasn't so far apart in age that, you know, they could say, well, you know, you're kind of like my dad, you're not really, or any of those objections. He was so unique in that way. And this is where I think we absolutely need to pray for more young men to rise up and understand the nature of true conservatism, the principles of conservatism that are built on truth and the biblical worldview, and be able to articulate it and disciple young men. And it doesn't have to be on the massive scale that one individual like Charlie did. They just have to be as effective in reaching the young men in their sphere of influence. And that's where I believe we need to focus if we are going to save America for the next generation. So we've got to take a break here, but we will be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning. Back. And, you know, what is really fascinating about X is that you see a lot of interesting trends that really go against the narrative of the status quo. And I loved waking up this morning and seeing this trending: Florida conservatives' backlash against Benny Johnson's Byron Donald's governor claims. This is what Grok said. Conservative influencer Benny Johnson faced sharp criticism on X after repeatedly calling U.S. Representative Byron Donald's, quote, Florida's next governor in an interview on the state's housing crisis. Donald's, who announced his 2026 gubernatorial bid in February 2025, very early, proposed cutting regulations, reforming the NEPA, ending green mandates, and prioritizing affordable housing while linking the issue to immigration and opposing H-1B visas. Interesting. Critics, including commentators Tracy Beans and former Representative Joel Rudman, rejected the premature endorsement amid the competitive Republican primary and raised concern over Donald's past abortion positions and donor ties. And so I posted this and, you know, said this is trending. D.C. needs to wake up and recognize that Donald's is not the heir apparent in Florida. And one of my, you know, main followers who comments a lot, his name is Charles Weber. Love the guy. He said, what is it with Republicans lately and our fear of holding a primary? If, quote unquote, your guy is as popular as you say he is, he'll win in a landslide, right? So it's fascinating to me that D.C. and basically the swamp is following kind of the Susie Wiles endorsement. And I don't even say Trump's endorsement, because this definitely it definitely is coming from Susie Wiles. You have people like Ted Cruz, Chip Roy, you know, and others who suddenly are coming out in favor and endorsing Byron Donalds who aren't even in Florida. And it's like Republicans, exactly like Charles said, it's like somehow we're scared of primaries because we just want to put someone in the office and say, well, this is the heir apparent. Nobody can question anything. Nobody can suggest that we have any type of different candidate. This is the person that, quote unquote, MAGA is choosing. And we need to reject that across the board. But I think it's very clear that Floridians are objecting to this entirely. But James Fishback, who was on the show last week, you know, doing this beautiful rant on the whole SNAP benefit issue, and he's the CEO of Azoria, recently announced his candidacy and is getting a ton of traction on X because he's calling out the issues, I think, in a way that Floridians really love. And it's very akin to what Governor DeSantis has been doing. And so he joins me now. So, James, thanks so much for coming back on the program. And I'd like to think that, you know, after being on this program and now suddenly, you know, you have a gubernatorial campaign that's been launched, that, you know, we here at American Family Radio Station just, you know, we bring people in and then they fly. So, you know, congratulations on the announcement of your campaign. And tell me, you know, your view of where the primary is in Florida.
Well, good morning, Jenna. My view is that Ron DeSantis is the greatest governor in Florida history. He's the greatest governor in America. And we need a candidate in the Republican primary who is going to do two things, who's going to preserve what Governor DeSantis built over these last 8 years. And the number two is going to make it easier to raise a family, buy a home, and retire with dignity. When my grandfather was alive and, you know, 30 years old in the 1940s, the truth is that half of 30-year-old men like him were married and owned their home. Today, only 15% of 30-year-old men are married and own their home. And we have a real crisis on our hands, and Byron Donalds is going to do nothing about it. Byron Donalds has been in this race since February. He got the coveted Susie Wiles, which is, to your point, not really the Trump endorsement, the Susie Wiles endorsement. He got the coveted Susie Wiles. He says he earns the Trump endorsement. Nobody else was vying for it. There was no interview process. Where was the application? Where was the meritorious qualification? Nothing. He didn't earn anything. That's why I call him DEI Donalds. DEI stands for didn't earn it. Look, presidents can appoint cabinet secretaries. They can designate ambassadors. They cannot appoint governors. We still have elections in Florida. And the way that some of these so-called influencers are acting is as if they're trying to disenfranchise 10 million Florida voters from our primary, which isn't even until August. Byron Donalds is pro H-1B. That is his position. He wants Florida companies to be able to fire Florida workers and replace them with cheap foreign slave labor from India. So he said a couple of years ago that he had an Indian pharmacist come to him who needed the help because she needed to stay here to have a job. Byron, we got 12,000 pharmacists every single year graduating from pharmacy school. Why on earth are you glazing an Indian immigrant, and why aren't you standing up for Florida workers? This year, Jenna, this year in January, he said, quote, Haitian Americans are integral to the Sunshine State and to America. First off, we don't do hyphenations. We don't do hyphenated Americans. By Haitian Americans, I grew up in South Florida. My family's been in the state for four generations. The Haitian Americans he's talking about are the ones who have been here for 3 weeks, 3 months, who got temporary protected status. They can't speak English. They don't assimilate. And he called them, quote, integral to our state. He is pro-mass migration. Here's my bickering with Byron. And he attacked me on stage at this Lincoln Day dinner earlier this week. He said that the woke right has soft bigotry for legal immigration. Byron, it doesn't matter whether it's illegal or legal. An invasion is an invasion. I don't care if it's H-1B, TPS, fake refugee, asylum. We need to get the people out of our country who are taking jobs, taking space, taking homes, and taking taxpayer resources. And then to your last point, we started this whole thing off talking about housing policies with slobbering Benny Johnson, who's just slobbering all over him with his, he's the next governor, as if the primary had been canceled. His housing policy is all ChatGPT slop. He doesn't address the number one thing that's causing the housing crisis, which is we have 50 million people here who are not even supposed to be in this country. Why doesn't he stand up to that and say, let's deport the H-1Bs. Let's deport the so-called legal immigrants who had no due process on the way in. They don't get due process on the way out. Byron Donalds is part of the George Bush old right, country club Republican, line go up, obsessed with GDP and the stock market. We need someone who's going to stand up for America first, put Florida first, and build on what Ron DeSantis has done over these past 8 years.
You know, well said. And I'm speaking with James Fishback, who is now a gubernatorial candidate for my home state of Florida. And I think these are the conversations that we need to have instead of the voting base just kind of saying, oh, well, this person has the Trump endorsement, so I'm not even going to look at anyone else, and not actually look at perhaps why this person was endorsed. I mean, I'm not convinced that, you know, there wasn't some other kind of deal when you have people like Roger Stone who are now posting on social media against you, basically trying to scare you from running in the race. It's like they don't want to have a primary. They don't want Byron Donalds to actually run on the merits, because if you actually ask and answer a lot of these questions about his fitness and suitability for governor, there are a lot of issues. And, you know, we've invited Byron Donalds on this program. I'm happy to have him. I would love to have him on this program to ask him all of these questions and to say, okay, what actually meritoriously beyond, you know, don't even mention the Trump endorsement. It ultimately doesn't matter, I think, in Florida as much as the DeSantis endorsement. And that remains to be seen, you know, when he will jump in and endorse a candidate. But I think that will matter a lot more. But beyond the Trump endorsement, what has he actually done in Congress for Floridians during his tenure? And one of the main things, James, that I also want to ask him, and this is where, you know, listeners know, I had, you know, basically I did not I didn't approve of how at all of how he handled the Amendment 3 and 4 issues that were such a big deal and got national attention last year in 2024, because Byron ran on being pro-life. And then when you have the basically abortion tourism bill that DeSantis had a hard-fought win on, you didn't see Byron Donalds coming to any of those rallies, any of those events. He didn't lift a finger to help. In fact, people on X, who were Floridians, who called his office, his office said, oh, well, that's a state issue, and Byron is a federal legislator. I mean, it was so beyond, and some of them actually thought they were talking about the Fourth Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, which is so out of touch and embarrassing. But those are the kinds of things that Byron needs to answer. And so you guys have been, you and Byron have been invited to a debate at the University of Florida. You've accepted, but at least as far as we know right now, Byron has not.
That's correct. It was given to us a week ago. We were both invited by the University of Florida College Republicans to have an in-person long-form debate about these issues. I agree with you, Jenna. If Byron is going to win, he's going to have to win. And let's have an open, long-form debate about the future of our party and the future of our state. The truth is that when Byron got up on that stage in Miami on Tuesday night and he attacked me in my, quote, soft bigotry, because I am not just against illegal immigration, I am against legal immigration. What he did was he dichotomized the entire race. This entire race is about two different visions at this point. Do you want to continue with the open borders, corporatist, let's get cheap foreign labor from India, China, Haiti, South America? We'll call it legal. We'll give it a J-1 visa. We'll give it an H-1B visa. We'll give it an EB-2 visa, whatever you want to call it. But just because it's lawful doesn't mean it's not awful. And it is awful. It is arrogant to come in to my state, our state, and say that you can fire someone on the job and replace them with a cheap foreign slave worker from India, and then even force that newly fired Floridian to train their replacement. What Governor DeSantis did 2 weeks ago is he went to all the state colleges and said, no more hiring these H-1Bs from India or China. No more of it. Jenna, we were told the lie that Americans aren't smart, that Americans aren't brilliant, that Americans aren't talented to take these roles. Well, what on earth are you guys talking about? These companies, these universities don't even advertise these jobs to Americans. They go right to the Indian labor pool, bypass the meritocratic, qualified American labor pool, and then pick from there. Why? Because they can pay them less, work them more. It's the same exact economic premise of slavery. Honestly, that's what it is. We might as well be honest. And then Byron goes on Benny Johnson's show yesterday, and he says that we have the talent, but they're just not trained yet. How dare you? How dare you say that we are not trained? Florida workers, American workers, are the smartest, hungriest, most brilliant people on earth. And he's going out here criticizing our kids, grandkids, for not being trained to take these jobs. I mean, some of these jobs, Jenna, were a social media manager, an assistant swim coach. We're not talking about building missiles. We're not talking about nuclear reactors. Yes, if we need a top Chinese scientist from Shanghai to come reopen a nuclear reactor in Southwest Florida, by all means, bring them over here. But enough with the cheap foreign slave labor. It is destroying our country. It is replacing our people. And Byron Donalds is complicit in that.
I'm speaking with James Fishback, who is now candidate for Florida's governor in the election next year in 2026. And, you know, this is where I see Byron Donalds being in a little bit of a pickle, like he was with Amendment 4, because it appears to me, and I think a lot of Floridians, that he's taking his cues from the Trump administration and can't. And now, because, you know, Trump is for H-1B, he can't actually directly oppose that or have any actual opinions himself. And one of the best things about Governor DeSantis that Floridians love is that he knows the difference between working with Donald Trump versus working for Donald Trump. And I want the next governor of Florida to work with Trump, but not for him. I don't think Byron gets that. And you have to be willing, like Governor DeSantis was, to stand up for principle. He was, I know this just from, you know, being involved here in Florida personally, when Trump wasn't coming out against Amendment 4 initially, that didn't deter DeSantis. He did the right thing and picked up the phone almost every day and was calling Trump and explaining to him, this is why you need to come out and oppose it. And eventually Trump did, but it was largely because DeSantis was not just going, well, I'm going to wait and see if Trump changes his mind. I don't want to offend him. I don't want to, you know, oppose him. He did the right thing. And then eventually he convinced Donald Trump to get on board with the correct position. That's the type of leadership that you need. And, you know, Trump and DeSantis are friends, but you need that kind of bold leadership, not just a yes man. And that's what I don't want in Florida, because I don't think we will have nearly the wins that we had under the 8 years of DeSantis if you get a yes man in Florida, James.
That's exactly right. It's work with, not work for. I respect President Trump. I called him the other day and we were talking about the economy and some of the things that are happening behind the scenes. The president will always have my respect. I'll respect him as an equal. As a governor of a state, an awesome state like Florida, I was born and raised in my entire life. My family's known for four generations. We have to have a good, equal relationship with the federal government. None of this codependency, none of this toxicity. I'll always work shoulder to shoulder with President Trump and whoever may succeed him, because this is going to be, you know, the first 4-year term would overlap with whoever succeeds President Trump for 2 years. And so at the end of the day, the Amendment 4 thing, I think, really gets me, because it was all the excuses in the book. Well, it's a state issue. Yeah, you represent Florida's 19th congressional interest. You represent
exactly.
A state. And by the way, why are you using excuses about federalism when babies are being murdered? Why are you using expressions about federalism when you've got rapacious businessmen pulling aside a 21-year-old single mom saying, now is not a good time to get pregnant. Here's a number. They close at 8. I mean, this is ridiculous. This is the problem with Byron Donalds. It's excuses. Excuses, excuses, excuses. He says, oh, all of a sudden he wants to now be against the H-1B program. He's been in Congress for 5 years. 5 years. He hasn't introduced a single bill to tackle the mass migration crisis into our state, to reform H-1B, to end H-1B, none of that. And that is the issue with all of this, is you've got somebody who all of a sudden wants to become governor. But remember, she was interviewed for vice president. Trump picked J.D. over Byron Donalds. President Trump didn't think highly enough of Byron Donalds to make him the vice president of the United States. And then after that, Byron ran and tried to get a job as a cabinet secretary, HUD, Housing and Urban Development. And President Trump passed him up for that job as well. President Trump didn't think highly enough of Byron to make him a cabinet secretary. So he passed him up for VP, passed him up for a cabinet secretary, and now Byron wants sloppy seconds. Now he wants to treat Florida as a consolation prize. And we say no to that. We are the greatest state in the country because of Ron DeSantis' leadership. We need someone who's going to make it easier to raise a family, buy a home, retire with dignity, get a great paying job. That starts with banning Blackstone from buying up homes in our entire neighborhoods, bidding out families. That starts with ending the H-1B program at the state level. And I'd be proud to do that as Florida's next governor.
Amazing. Well, James Fishback, thanks so much. You can follow him on X at @J_Fishback and reach me and my team, Jenna, at AFR.net.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.
Preborn's whole mission is to rescue babies from abortion and lead their families to Christ. Last year, Preborn's network of clinics saw 8,900 mothers come to Christ. Please join us in this life-saving mission. To donate, go to preborn.com/AFR.